The countdown that's currently on for the next municipal election, which is going to take place in Toronto in October. And I checked on the Toronto.ca site today, and I counted 32 registered candidates for mayor listed. And it's an honor to be introducing one of them here today. And he's also worked as a chemical engineer, and he's spoken on subjects like the misinterpretation of the science of global warming. And he's currently running his campaign with such slogans as, "We have brains, let's use them," and "Science should trump emotions." And I'd like to welcome to the Word of Mouth Wednesday today, Mr. Selwyn Firth.
Thank you for your kind words, and I do appreciate your ability to let me be here.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for joining us here today. And I guess I want to ask you about the topic that's on a lot of people's minds, and because it's just recently happened, and it was a major event here in Toronto. What was your experience at the G20?
Well, my experience was I decided to check out what was happening because of I am a mayoral candidate, and I thought I should have a first-hand look at what was happening with regarding the police and the protesters. So I took the subway. I traveled by subway quite a bit. I took the subway down to Yonge and Bloor, and then I started walking down Yonge Street to King Street, and I started counting the broken windows to get an accurate number, and I estimated... My estimate was that there was about 30 on the east side of Yonge Street, and you double that for the west side, and you can say there's maybe 60. And that's about $100,000 in damage. But there was also collateral damage inside the stores, which I couldn't account for. But I got to the protest area at King and Bay, and the police were lined up in the riot gear, but they were very pleasant, easy to talk to, saying that the protesters had dissipated and they were up the street. So I walked up the street, I saw them, and there was really hardly anything going on. And then I went over to a local pub in the vicinity called the Imperial, where I played trivia, and I checked out what was happening there, and I saw this mass situation at Queen's Park. So I thought I should go over to look at it. And having been a graduate of the University of Toronto, I knew the ins and outs of the area. And I decided to go by the MedSci building to see if I could get an elevated look at the protesters. And I was told to stop progressing, which I did. I was about 60, 70 feet away from the police. And I said, "I'm just here to ask questions. I want to find out what's happening." And the police came over. I thought they were actually coming over to talk to me. But the first officer bumped into me three times, pushed me back. And then the other two grabbed me and said, "You're under arrest." And I said, "For what?" And they wouldn't tell me. They just said, "You're under arrest." They took me into custody, and then they put me through the whole fingerprinting, photographing, everything. Took off all my strings, my laces for my shoes. They cut the lace in my hood on my jacket. They took my belt, and... then they took me into custody, and then, you know, I was interred at the Eastern Avenue Cattle Corral, and it was really quite disturbing to see what happened and the kind of people that were there. Most of them claimed to be innocent, that they weren't doing anything. They weren't fighting. They weren't throwing. They weren't doing anything. They were just sitting there protesting, and they were, you know, charged and grabbed by the police. So it was a pretty devastating kind of situation. Then... things only got worse for me because I'm a type 1 diabetic. I'm insulin dependent. I need insulin every few hours. I advised this to the arresting officers. They took me to see the doctor they had on staff, and he didn't even know where he could get insulin. And I finally had to tell him there was a 24-hour Shoppers Drug Mart in a neighborhood that wasn't too far away. He tried to get the kind of insulin I needed. He couldn't. He got one type, which I was able to use, but it was not the long-acting type, so I had to be careful as to what I ate and how low my blood sugar got. So I didn't sleep that night. I didn't eat because I had a lack of insulin. And the other situation, next morning going up to the Finch Avenue Courthouse, I again asked about the insulin. They said, "Oh, it'll be there. Don't worry about it." I get to the Finch Avenue Courthouse and ask about the insulin, and they say, "Oh, no, we don't have any of that stuff here." And I said, "Well, the guys down at the Eastern Avenue told me this," and the other police officer referred to him as an a-hole. And I kind of agreed with that because the way the situation was, they had no preparation for anybody with any kind of medical condition that might be inadvertently caught up in this thing. I wasn't intending to protest. I was there as an observer, and I've I really observed a lot about the operation of the Toronto Police Force, and believe me, it's not pretty, and it's not something that I would like to see in this city continue the way it did. I finally, after about 16 hours of being in custody, I was able to get another shot of insulin. I was hustled back to the courthouse, hustled up to the bail hearing so that they could grant me bail and get me out of their sight and out of mind. And that was it. I finally got home around 8 o'clock Sunday night, which was 26 hours after I had initially left the house to go and observe what was happening.
Right. Wow. This is quite a situation. Serious situation here. We're speaking with Selwyn Firth, but we've just got to take a quick break here. We'll be right back here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday with more info on what's.
This is Kevin Annett with the friends and relatives of the disappeared, and I want you to listen to Word of Mouth Wednesday. And please listen to our website, hiddenfromhistory.org.
Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here on the show, and we're talking with Selwyn Firth, who's a candidate for mayor, who was just describing a bit about his experience at the G20. And I just wanted to back up your story here before you started talking about the horrible conditions of this what's come to be known as Trontanamo Bay, this facility on Eastern Avenue. I was just wondering about what could you just describe the incident that they where you were apprehended? Like you said, you were in Queen's Park, but
no, I wasn't at Queen's Park. I tried to look at Queen's Park from the University of Toronto campus. I was on the near the Med Science Building, near the McLeod Auditorium, mm-hmm. J.R.R. McLeod Auditorium, where they have science shows and various other things. Right. I was 60, 70 feet from where the police were. The police were guarding a set of steps that lead down to Queen's Park, mm-hmm. and it's an elevated area. It's a plaza. It's got cobble, pebble stone surface and everything. Mm-hmm. And I was at least 60, 70 feet from the police, and they told me to stop, so I stopped. Mm-hmm. And then they told me to leave. I said, no, I'm here. I want to observe. I want to know what's going on. What's happening? Mm-hmm. And I insisted that I be told. I told them I identified myself as a mayoral candidate, at least expecting to get a little bit of respect about, checking out what's happening. Nothing. They came, arrested me, and threw me to the ground. I ended up with lacerations on my face, my knees, and my hand. And this was for doing nothing except exerting my right to be able to be somewhere.
And I know that there's a lot of, I know that this similar things, I guess, happened they're saying over 1,000 people had been detained or arrested or, kettled during this G20 weekend. Were you charged? I know a lot of the people had been released without any charges. Were you charged with anything?
I was charged with obstructing police. And that's the only charge that I have. And I'm released on $1,000 bail. And I have to appear in court on, August 23rd to set a trial date. And that's the situation as it is right now. I had bail conditions where I wasn't allowed to go downtown until July the 5th, which is, Monday. And so everything is okay at this point in time.
Right, yeah. And we're glad you're able to make it here today to CKLN for this interview here on 88.1 FM. And with all this going on, I think it'd be good to get into some of the issues with the campaign for mayor, because you're running as a candidate for mayor. And, one of them that I noticed on your site, because, and I went to this, selwynformayor.com, you can check out the Selwyn Firth site, and one of the links I noticed on there was an open letter you had written to Dalton McGuinty.
I did.
And the subject of this was on the issue of global warming. I guess, I was wondering, what are your thoughts on global warming, and, especially with from what I read in the letter, is that you're not totally convinced with the carbon dioxide as the cause.
No, carbon dioxide has got nothing to do with the cause. It's the messenger. When you burn coal, you release an awful lot of heat. When you burn oil, you release even more heat. And if any of the scientists of the past 150 years had actually done the calculations of the heat energy that was actually being released in total to the atmosphere, they would have come up with a completely different reason for global warming. It would have been a heating effect. And I presented a lecture at the American Mensa gathering that just happened in Detroit a few days ago to an audience of over 100 people who looked at me as if I was some kind of crazy person, but then they listened and they understood that it's a heating effect. It's not the carbon dioxide. And by using alternatives and renewables, we're actually doing more harm than we are by continuing to use the hydrocarbons. The issue I find is that if you don't get the science right, you make all kinds of predictions about what's happening because you can't explain things. But if they had done the science in the first place, they would have been explaining it quite well. The IPCC in 2005 released a report saying that they estimated that the heating rise since 1800 was somewhere between around 0.78 degrees Celsius plus or minus 0.026 degrees Celsius. That's a pretty wide range for a very small amount of material. My actual calculations, and I challenge any chemical engineer, any chemist to refute them, is that if you burn enough coal and oil to put 150 ppm of CO2 into the atmosphere, the energy released will heat the atmosphere by 1.68 degrees Celsius, which is significantly more than what the IPCC has said. And so by using alternative renewable energy, such as biodiesel, has at least as much energy in it as petrodiesel. And by continuing to use it, we are not taking it out of the atmosphere. We're keep adding heat to the atmosphere. And that's the real issue. And the same thing with most other renewables is that we're not, we're still putting the energy back into the atmosphere. And by doing so, we keep heating the atmosphere instead of thinking about mitigating what's happening. And one of the things I propose is that we use a common fertilizer, anhydrous ammonia. If you blast it into the upper atmosphere using rockets, you could make a few more clouds. And clouds could reflect enough sunlight that we could maintain our nice, cozy, 11 degrees Celsius average around the world. Mm-hmm. But, we have to start thinking about it now, because if we don't, my current calculation is that we're using enough energy to heat the atmosphere by a tenth of a degree per year. That's 10 degrees Celsius in 100 years. And by that time, we'll have ice melting like you wouldn't believe. We'll have all kinds of catastrophes that we can't even predict now. Storms are going to be even greater. Hurricanes are probably going to be greater. More tornadoes in different parts of the world. We'll probably have more tornadoes further north because the warmer air will be coming further north, and we'll be experiencing more in Canada than they do in the United States. The tornado belt may actually move, several hundred miles north in 100 years. We don't know, because we can't predict any of these things. All we know is that there's an awful lot of energy going into the atmosphere right now, and it's got to cause reactions. It's a chemical thermodynamic situation, and all of that takes place, and there's nothing we can do about it. But if we did make clouds, be one way of mitigating what we're doing.
Well, yeah, it's really interesting to be speaking with you on this, because I know, and you just mentioned that you had done a presentation, I guess, against or with some of the the smartest people in North America. If you're at the North America Mensa meeting, doing this presentation on this the non-science of climate change. I guess with what you're talking about and how it's, you don't think it's a carbon dioxide fault that's causing this global warming. So I guess when you're hearing a lot of this stuff in the news, or these ideas are that you're talking about carbon caps, carbon trading, capping carbon. Like, is this you're thinking that's like not even.
It doesn't make sense. It's not the problem. The problem is the energy that's released when you use carbon. If we could magically convert everything to solar power today, we would still be heating the atmosphere at the same rate, because the heat energy that's used for the lights here, for the speakers, for everything, mm-hmm. all of that goes, it ultimately ends up heating the atmosphere, because that's the nature of energy. You can't create it, you can't destroy it. All you can do is store it. You can store it in batteries, you can store it in behind power dams, you can store it in wood, peat, coal, oil, all of those things that take chemical reactions. The energy can be stored there, but once it's released, it's got to go somewhere, and if it doesn't go into the oceans, it goes into the atmosphere. So we have a choice, either heat the atmosphere rapidly or heat the oceans slowly, or build some clouds and, you know, try and mitigate the whole situation. But we have choices, but if we don't know that we have the choices, we don't know what the choices are and what we're really doing, there's very little that we can actually do as a population. And that's my main issue, is trying to get the science out to the people to understand. And it's not hard to understand. It's relatively simple stuff.
For real. And how about we get into another topic here, because I know it's one of the top topics when I went to your site, Sell One for Mayor. And it had to do with, I guess it's a subject that doesn't get talked about too much on the radio, but, you know, I know last summer it was a major subject here in Toronto, and that was the subject of garbage. What's your policy on garbage? What are you thinking for garbage in Toronto?
Well, garbage contains an awful lot of energy, and we're an energy-dependent society. All of the garbage, if you bury it in landfill, it eventually gets converted to CO2 because we have bacteria. They like to eat up garbage. They'll even eat up plastic over time. But it takes a long time. But over, 10,000 years, all the garbage that's been buried in landfill around the world is going to turn into CO2, and it's going to penetrate into the atmosphere at some point. There's heat associated with that, and that heat is going to go into the atmosphere as well. But if we can take the energy out of that garbage, incinerate it, and do it cleanly, incinerate it and scrub the gases so that the energy is the excess energy that we're not using in our electrical generation goes into a heating water, which we can then put into the lake, and the lake will eventually take it to the oceans. It'll warm the oceans a fraction of a degree for every degree that we would be heating the atmosphere instead. And we can do it cleanly in a two-step process, because we can take a big container of water, pump all of the exhaust gas through it, and strip out all of the toxins from that gas, cool the gas to ambient temperatures, let it float into the atmosphere, and then treat that water as a separate entity and do a heat exchange with that in Lake Ontario water. So we separate the toxins from the lake water, from everything, and it can be done. And it's worth, in my estimate, it's worth about $425 million a year, because we saved $100 million in burial fees that we've been paying to Michigan or wherever it's going to be buried. And we make $300 million or $325 million from the electricity that's generated by building a power plant. And, we kill two birds with one stone, minimize our situation, and we don't have this stench of garbage all over the place, and that is just piling up and doing nothing for us when it's got a lot of valuable energy in it.
Well, yeah, these are some interesting ideas. One of them I wanted to ask you about is something, because you just brought up water, and I know that there is some movements in Toronto talking about Toronto's water supply. And I just was wondering, with your background in science, I was wondering if there's something in Toronto's water supply that I think there's some other places in North America and Europe don't have it, and that's fluoride. Are you at all concerned with fluoride in the water supply? Is that an issue?
I am finding more about fluoride than I ever wanted to know. The idea of the fluoridation of water has been subject for question for some time. The original idea was that it was going to help children's teeth, but I've been reading and finding out that there are some that it seems to cause cracking in teeth, and that's more predominant with cavities, because if you get a crack in the enamel surface of your teeth, then the bacteria can find a place to live, and they can start eating away and dissolving the enamel and you end up with cavities. So there is a question about that. And there are states in the United States where they ban the use of fluoride, and they don't even allow it in products like toothpaste. But again, they have this kind of a waste product that they put in toothpaste, claiming it's got this benefit. But I don't think there is a lot of study done on that, and I would really worry about how much is in there and if there are any safe levels, because I'm quite familiar with fluoride, and it's one very toxic material. Mm-hmm. So I do have concerns about it, for sure.
Okay, and you know, with a concern that's on a lot of people's minds is what happened at the G20. And we started off the interview with you giving your story, and it sounded pretty hardcore what happened to you, your experience at the G20 a couple weekends ago. But then, you know, when I went to SelwynForMayor.com, I saw that one of your campaign issues or things you're trying to do is encourage youth and police interaction. So I was wondering, has this changed at all with your recent experience with the cops, and what is this issue for you?
I've always thought there should be more interaction between the police and youth, and in ways of competitiveness, you know, like of you know, games. You know, young people under 20 tend to be physically quite active, mm-hmm. and they like challenges, and I could see that they could be interacting and playing games against local police forces and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I still think that's a valid way of approaching the police interaction with youth. Mm-hmm. I think the situation that happened at the G20 is a bad thing for the city, and that it should be corrected and addressed. But the idea of interacting, keeping the police well interacting with the youth instead of being seen as a fear factor, and trying to keep peace and orderly conduct because your people are afraid of being arrested, I think that's an issue. And I don't see that as a real possible way of having better relationships with the police. But I think the police have to stand up and say, yeah, we didn't do it right. We should have done this. We should have stood up and protected civil rights, not gone with it. You know, I was telling friends, I said, I'm not saying that the G20 is like anything that happened in World War II with the dire consequences for the Jewish populations of Europe. Mm-hmm. But at the trials in Nuremberg, the issue was I was only following orders, and that wasn't a valid excuse. It's not a valid excuse for any police officer to say I was just following orders. They have the knowledge and the responsibility to protect people, not to trash their civil rights. And if they didn't do that, then they're at fault. And that's something that has to be corrected.
For real. And, the looking into the G20 will continue with all these more stories we're hearing, all the words that are coming out, reports that are coming out daily, more stuff. You know, we're finding out that it took place within, you know, that a few day span, a couple weeks ago, with the major G20 event. And then also here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday, we're going to start getting into talking a lot more about the race for mayor, because this is a big countdown, I guess, till October 25th, 2010. We're going to elect a new mayor in Toronto, and you know, it'll be municipal elections. So that's why I'm glad I was able to speak with you, Selwyn Firth, here today. I guess is there any? Do you have any last words, maybe, on the campaign?
Well, I could always use volunteers. Anybody willing to volunteer to help me get the city going in the right direction, I'd really appreciate it. And if there's, you know, it's a great experience to get involved with political stuff when you're young, at young age. I was involved with the NDP years ago when a former teacher of mine was running for the downtown area. And I helped out with his campaign, and I got to learn a little bit about the politics. I acted as a scrutineer at an election night. That was something that I had, you know, no idea, but I was, you know, 20 years old, and that's what was happening. So he respected me enough to take me on as to help him, and so he assigned me as a scrutineer for one of the polling stations, and that's what I did. So it was a great experience, and I urge anybody, man or woman, you know, if they want to do something, they need to start young and early and get involved. But being apathetic and saying, oh, somebody else will do it, you end up with the same old all the time. And that's why I've decided to try and get things going in a different direction in the city. I've lived here for 44 years, and it's a great city. It's one of the best cities in the world, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. But if we get somebody else, like the people that are running, I don't think any of them have a clue as to what the city needs, and they're just there for the politics. And I really want to do something, and I don't want to denigrate anybody. I just think that they're not knowledgeable about what's necessary and what's going to happen if we don't do things, because they're talking nonsense about the transit system, things like that, where they don't understand why we're having all of this stupid congestion. You know, 18th out of 18 cities in congestion. And why? Because we haven't built any roads or expressways in 40 years. And yet we've doubled the size of the downtown core and with people and businesses. And yet you can't empty and fill a container with the same old infrastructure if you double the size of the container. And that's the issue that I have, is that we're not doing the right things to make the city viable and workable. So people are going to start moving elsewhere at some point. I mean, it'll still be very desirable to live here, but how many businesses are going to continue to suffer the mind-boggling consequences of congestion the way it is?
For real. And yeah, and hopefully before October 25th, we'll be able to speak with you again on the Word of Mouth. But yeah, thanks for joining us today on the Word of Mouth Wednesday, Selwyn Firth.
Well, I thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure for me to be here. I hope your audience participates and gets involved with the election and helps out any candidate, not just me, any candidate that they choose. Like I have my agenda, my ideas, but there's other candidates that they might, you know, feel more comfortable with. And I urge them to do that. If it means I lose the election, so be it. That's the way life is.
Right. So that was just Selwyn Firth here in the studio joining us. And for more info, you can check out selwynformayor.com. That's SELWYN for mayor.com.